Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's the week of July 3rd, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. And by the time people listen to this, Chris, we'll be shaking the glitter off our clothes and waking up in Vegas.
Shaking the glitter. Yes, looking forward to the jet lag.
Do you get jet lag? I never get jet lag.
I don't know. I've been staying up late this week just trying to adapt to it, you know, staying up to like 3:30 or whatever and trying to get up at normal time. So we'll see what happens.
We just need to get you an all-nighter at Binion's, man, and that'll clear that all up for you.
I need any edge I can get when I'm out there.
But yeah, we're off to Vegas. We'll be in Vegas, like I said, by the time people are probably listening to this. Looking forward to it. Got a lot of the stuff to do out there, Chris. And
tons of stuff.
Yeah, I got the Poker Palooza, which was always fun to check out, and a lot of people to see, and hopefully play some poker too. Although I don't know when we're going
to
do that.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out when that would be, unless we play the main event, which we might do.
Yeah, you never know. You know, we could raid the company and...
we might get some poor sucker to think we're good players because we have Annie Up shirts on. Might want to back us. You never know.
You never know. I did. Someone saw my shirt the other day and said, oh, he's a professional. I didn't discourage them. but we definitely will be playing poker one place, and that is going to be at 9 p.m. on July 2nd. And we're going to meet the Sportsbook of Caesars and all the great Annie Up listeners who happen to be in Vegas the same time we are.
Yeah, hopefully they'll show up and we'll play. Maybe we'll get a mixed game going.
Yeah, maybe Katy Perry will come and bring Daniel Negreanu and we'll have a good time.
But you know what, though? Although it's not really a vacation for us, we really need one.
Yeah, we absolutely, absolutely need a vacation.
Especially after this last... 7 days, I guess? Oh, my God.
Yes. Finally, our long Anti-Up Nation nightmare is now over.
You know, last week I was like, I always wait till Friday morning to post the show. You know, I always wait till after midnight on Thursday if we do it on Thursday or we do it Friday. You know, I'm real particular about that because I like to see the dates all be on a Friday date, you know?
Right.
So last week, you know, we taped the show a little early and I was like, you know what? I'm going to post it on Thursday because I'm just so busy. And I post a show, and then I go to check on it to make sure everything's playing right, and something happens. It's not playing. And literally at that moment, my stepson knocks on the door and says, hey, did you hear what happened to Michael Jackson? I was like, no, I'm in my own little Annie Up world here. I have no idea what's going on in the outside world. He said, he's dead. And sure enough, it sparked the largest internet overload in the history of mankind. So that... takes our host site, which is called SiteGround, and they freak out because they overload, and they look at us and say, hey, wait a minute. I think you guys are using too much bandwidth. We're going to cut you back.
And that's my favorite. That's my favorite part of the story, too, because we have the unlimited plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, math is not my first, my native language. but I'm trying to wrap my head around how we can exceed unlimited. I've been asking a lot of really smart people this whole week, and none of them have come up with an answer. But
yeah, well, the problem is that when they told us we were unlimited, we have unlimited storage, not unlimited bandwidth.
Okay.
So my pleading fell on deaf ears, telling them that we'd been using this amount of bandwidth or less since January, and they hadn't said anything. And now all of a sudden, just cut us cold turkey like that was unacceptable. But they were unwilling to budge, so we have moved. And,
right.
Of course, we are inspired by Vanessa Russo, and we've moved to GoDaddy.
mostly because I want to be a GoDaddy girl.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Don't, I don't want to hang out with him. I just want to be one.
I'm having nightmares imagining the slow motion video of you unzipping your coat.
Well, yeah, you can enjoy that nightmare now because it'll be on at halftime of the Super Bowl this year. I'm toning up right now.
Yeah, you're toning up. I gotta share a room with you for a week in Vegas. I don't want that imagery. But so you might see a few glitches here and there. In the meantime, some of the things you might see are like our address in the URL bar might have a different name, even though you've typed in the address or something like that. But and then you know the feeds to some of the blog things might not be there right now. But they'll be all fixed hopefully within the next week.
And we are so happy.
Yeah, I tell you, it was so stressful, back and forth, changing our email stuff, oh man, what a nightmare. But we are full power, we are back, and there should be no problems with your downloads. Oh man, we got so many emails too. Hey, do you guys know your site's down? And I was like, oh man, this is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, that's the price we pay for our progress, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but the worst part was that it came while you were traveling around the state to play in tournaments and do some business, and I was traveling around the state to play in tournaments, do some business, and we got this Vegas trip, so it was pretty daunting. But I think we finally got it over thanks to our excellent computer guy Matt Nelson.
Yes, very good work, Matt. And yeah, I was on the road. I went down to South Florida. Always like going down there. Good people down there and good poker down there. And Chris, I came back with a story, a discussion, and a tip.
Awesome. We don't even need a main topic today.
No, I mean, listeners are like, you know, some listeners, oh, more stories. Some listeners are like, no, more tips. And I'm like, no, I have went out and got everything that everybody's ever asked for in one trip. That's how hard I work on these business trips.
Awesome.
And, of course, I'll pause to laugh here, as my wife always laughs when I say business trip.
I know.
Every time I call from the poker table.
Yeah, I know.
All right, we'll start off with the story, and I love the story. I mean, last week's story about the guy going to the wrong room, that's tough to beat. But this one, Chris,
okay,
might be there.
Okay.
All right, so I'm playing in the tournament. Very first hand of the tournament, Chris. Small blind raises, big blind re-raises, small blind pushes, big blind calls, small blind turns over ace-queen off, big blind turns over ace-ace, ace-queen doesn't approve, ace-queen out. All right,
wow,
now that story is funny already.
Yes.
Because who goes all in with ace-queen on the first hand of a tournament?
Yeah, not in the first hand.
Out of position against somebody who re-raised you? It's ridiculous, all right? So I'm already laughing about that. Two hands later, a woman comes over and goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry I'm late. This is my seat, right? And sits down in the guy's seat. And we're all like, no, there was some other dude there. And she's like, well, it says table 24, seat 7. Isn't that 24? Yeah, it is.
Oh, no.
And so we're like, wow. So, you know, the dealer looks this up. It turns out that this dolt sat in the wrong seat at the beginning of the tournament. Shouldn't have even been in the hand that he got knocked out on.
Oh, my. Let me ask you before you continue. Did you get a seat card or something?
Yeah, you get a they do like a seat slip there where they write down your name and you go and you give it to the dealer and you sit down and theoretically the dealer checks it to make sure it's correct before allowing you to actually sit down.
Yeah.
I say theoretically because obviously that didn't happen here.
Yeah, there's a loophole in that theory.
Yeah, yeah. So this guy is a great guy. He shouldn't even have been in that seat. He probably should have got 8-3 offsuit at some other seat and would still be alive in the tournament.
And she'd be gone instead.
But this woman is like, well, what do I do? This is my seat. Where are my chips?
Yeah.
So they call the floor over, of course. And, you know, as soon as the floor gets there and sees the situation, you almost feel like buying them a drink. Because they're like, man, I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing airport glue. And so they had to figure this all out. So what they're trying to do is they were trying to find the guy that got busted, right?
Yeah.
To get his seat card, because you keep it, and find out, you know, what the mistake was. So everybody at our table is like, you know, standing up, looking around the room. There he is over there. So the floor runs over and grabs him and gets the seat, come back. It turns out that he was supposed to be in seat 4.
Oh, at the same table?
At the same table.
Oh, jeez.
All right, so we go to seat four. Turns out that guy was supposed to be in seat six.
The guy who's in seat four is supposed to be in seat six? Are you kidding me?
The guy in seat six was supposed to be in a totally different table, Chris.
Oh, no way.
I can't make this stuff up.
Oh, you have to be making this up. This is ridiculous.
I sat down after I told the story to a couple other people. I'm like, no one's going to believe this. Let me see if I can make up something even more ridiculous. And I failed, Chris.
This is insane.
Yeah, the dealer got obviously chastised for not checking any of the seat cards, apparently. Everybody was like, it was like musical chairs at the poker room. And so, you know, I posted this on the Facebook page right after it, and a couple of people wanted to know what the ruling was. How do you fix this problem, right?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, because you're not going to give chips back. I mean, the guy with pocket aces, he didn't do anything wrong, right?
Yep.
So so after they tracked everything down, they you know, got a fresh – they had to go back and find the seat that was empty. There was a seat empty somewhere in the room, right?
Yeah.
And they got the chips from there and gave that to the lady that was in whose seat was taken. And then I guess they just left everybody else sit where they were and then move them around. But, wow.
Man, there's like 100 lessons to be learned there. So it's just like a sheet of paper they give you with, like, written out? They don't give you, like, an actual card or a placard, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And I guess some people were saying that, you know, anytime you get something that's handwritten and God forbid, never let me handwrite anything.
No, no.
Because things would be all effed up. But, yeah, I think the guy that was at the wrong table said he misread the number on it. So, I mean, they're, you know, but, you know, that's what the dealer's there to check it. And, you know, there should be, you know, it shouldn't happen, right?
God, a million things had to line up perfectly for it to work out that way.
Isn't that true?
Because all those people in the wrong seats, someone should have looked at their thing and said, I mean, how do you not... That's the first thing you do is I'm at seat 2, table 24 or whatever. You go to table 24, you make sure it's table 24, and then you count from the dealer, 1, 2, there I sit. When somebody has the seat number, what do you just sit at a table leisurely and say, I think I'll just sit here? And how many of those things had to happen? They all had to have the same mind. Oh, my God, that's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like hitting lottery and getting struck by lightning on the same day.
All right, well, it can't be that story, but I got a little point of discussion here that also happened on this trip.
Does it involve you getting screwed?
Yeah,
yes!
It does.
Yes!
Because, you know, every time I take a trip, I get screwed.
I know.
And it started by my hotel room having a beautiful view of the air conditioning unit. At La Quinta, which, you know, thanks, guys. But no, I, you know, we've launched this really cool thing called the Antioch Poker Tour. We talked about it on the show, and people love it. We were going around the state. People, you know, come up and talk about how exciting it is to drive around the state and win some points. But Chris, the Antioch Poker Tour has screwed me not once, Chris, but twice on this trip.
Well, that was why we invented it. It was just to screw you over.
So the first one was I was at the event down in Mardi Gras. We got down to the final four, top three paid, right?
Yeah.
And I jokingly said, hey, you guys want to chop? You know, of course, my menacing two chips in my stack, it was clearly a joke.
Yeah.
But everybody said, you know what? Sure, let's chop.
Cool.
All right.
Awesome.
4-1 for Scott. So we decided to chop it four ways, which came out to be about $220 a person, right?
Yeah.
But then somebody said, well, what do we do about the Antioch Player of the Year points? And I'm like, well, you know, other rooms where they chop, they usually go by a chip count. So people are like, oh, that's all right, but why don't we play it out for the chips? Or the points.
Yeah, the points, yeah.
And I'm like, wow, you know, if the room lets you... Sure, whatever. Well, the room came over, and they're like, you know, the floor came over. He's like, you know, hey, I'm a real nice guy, but, you know, I can't pay for a dealer to continue dealing after you guys chop just for points.
Yeah, that's
understandable.
We're
like, oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Totally understand. So then everybody said, all right, well, let's just play it out. And what we'll do is we'll just take money off of the top and, you know, give fourth place some money. So we decided to give fourth place $100.
Sweet.
All right?
Yeah.
And somehow I come back from my terribly deficient chip stack to finish third, not fourth. So I win $153. But, Chris.
Yeah.
Had we not had the whole Antioch Player of the Year points, I would be walking out of there $220, not $153.
Well, now wait a minute. Now, before
that's $67 I left on the table.
This doesn't count as a screwing to me. This counts as you were fortunate enough to even have three guys at the table who were willing to say, "Yeah, let's chop with the poor Annie Up publisher who's only got two chips and a prayer." You know, let's this guy get in on some of the money, and then we can just go home. But then when they realized they couldn't go home, I'm sure they regretted saying, "Oh, the two chip guy now gets some money." You know what I mean? So I would consider it that you were bonus because you should have only gotten $100. Actually, you shouldn't have gotten any. You should have had to play it out. So yeah. You didn't get screwed. You should see the brighter side. I'm surprised you're always seeing the brighter side of things.
Yeah, well, I guess you're rubbing off on me.
Yeah, I am. I'm getting your negative, and you're getting my negative. I'm getting your positive.
I took a little piece with you on this trip, and it was the Chris Cassenza that came out of me.
Every time you go away, you take
Paul Young,
piece
you are not.
Of me.
But 2 days later, Chris, I get screwed yet again.
Now, this might be a real screwing.
And I know you're going to tell me I didn't get screwed. But
okay, we'll see.
So I'm at the Palm Beach Kennel Club for their great event, $200 buy-in, blah, blah, blah. All right, so we get down to the final table, top five pay, right?
Yeah.
And miraculously, everybody says, "You know what? We've come this far. Shouldn't everybody at the final table at least get their money back?"
Yeah.
And of course, then again, I'm like kind of middling, and so I'm not my normal, you know, wing and a prayer chip stack here.
Yeah.
But so they decide, you know what? Let's try to take $1,000 off of the prize pool and give $200 to 6 through 10. And everybody's like, "All right, sure, cool." I'm like, "Score! I got money now, right?"
Yeah.
So we get down to the final five and make it down to the final five where the real money is. And we decide to chop again. We decide the chip leader has a massive amount of chips. All right, he has chips from like tournaments like 4 days ago. He's kind of like Ben the Master, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we said, "All right, we'll let you have first place money, and the rest of us will carve up second through fifth." And so it's $1,080. I'm like, "Hey, that's a good day at the office, right, Chris?"
Oh, that's the best day you've ever had.
Yeah, it probably is, actually. And so I didn't think anything of it, but then the poker manager came over to me, and he's like, "You know, wow, how could you let that deal go through, Scott?" I'm like, "What do you mean? $1,000? I'm taking that every day and twice on Sunday." And he's like, "Oh, come on, but the first place guy would have given you a little something. You didn't have to give him all the money, right?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Hey, you're right. I got screwed." So I guess a couple of us talked about it later, and the first place guy kind of sheepishly said, "Yeah, I probably would have, you know, given you guys $500 out of first place." So I'm like, "Oh, what did I do for not doing the math?"
But yeah, but you would have made what, $100 more, $125?
Yeah, $50. Yeah. Who knows? But the real screwing came when we finished we did the chop, right?
Yeah.
So theoretically, we should be done going home, right?
Yeah.
And I had like these tentative plans, if I could get out of there in time and race all the way across the state to meet my wife and friends at the Rays game where Pat Benatar was playing the concert afterwards.
Yes.
And I was calculating the math. I'm like, "Oh, I think I can still get there in time for the concert. I'm going to miss the game, but I'll get there in time for the concert." So we do the chop, and everybody's like, "Well, what do we do about the player of the year points?" And I'm like, "Well, generally it's by chip stack." And
where have I heard this before?
And they're like, "Well, let's play it out for the points." And I'm like, "Well, I guess you could, but, you know, it's a dealer." And then the poker manager said, "Yeah, sure, if you guys want to play it for points, go ahead."
Wow.
I'm like, "Grrr." There goes hit me with the best shot.
Yep.
No more We Belong. I've been hanging out in the shadows of the night here in Palm Beach Kennel Club playing for points. The contest I can't even win because I own the magazine. And I ended up finishing second, so I got more points. So, you know, I guess it was all worth it, right?
I guess. I mean, you're just taking points away from some other deserving player. But, yeah, whatever.
That's true. But they know what they're getting themselves into.
And I don't think you got screwed. I mean, yeah, I guess you got screwed from the concert. But
yeah, I did because I didn't get there in time. I totally missed it.
That sucks. All right, so you were screwed, but only once. I don't think the other time you were screwed. I think.
All right. Okay. One screwing.
Yeah, one screwing is enough.
All right, then we'll move on quickly. But here's my tip for the week. I get down to the first day I was down in South Florida. I swung by the Casino Dealers Academy, one of the many great poker dealing schools in the state of Florida, a good advertiser of us. I decided to stop in and, you know, say hi to them like I do with all of our advertisers, make them all feel special.
Warm and
fuzzy. As they are.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I sat down, and I told the guy, "Hey, since I'm here, why don't you teach me how to pitch cards?"
And you need it. Oh, my God. If anybody needs to learn how to deal, it's you.
See, you should have been there because he's like, what do you need to pitch cards for, Scott? And I'm like, for the home game. They're like, why? I'm like, because I want to impress my friends. I think it'd be cool if I could go in there and, you know, pitch like all the dealers, right?
At least get the cards to us. Yeah, I mean, at least get them to us. You leave the cards like 3 inches in front of you, and we all have to reach for them. Come on! I've got short arms.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know, he gave me a brief lesson and told me how the cards and the physics, and that I was throwing the cards, not pitching them. And, you know, by the end of the lesson, I was able to pitch cards in 47 different angles. None of them where they should have gone. But I'm progressing.
But you're pitching.
Yeah, I'm pitching. But then I'm like, all right, one more lesson. Because in our home game, we play a lot of pot limit, and it's always past the anison when we play pot limit because no one can ever figure out the pot, right? I'm like, what's an easy way to calculate a pot size bet? Right? Isn't this useful information?
Yes, it is. I just have a feeling there's no easy way to do it.
Ah, okay. But they said, and the reason I asked is because they talked about the possibility of pot limit games coming to Florida when these new laws come, and that it's an easy formula that dealers need to learn. That's all it is. And I'm like, well, great. Teach me it. So here it is. They call it the BERP rule, Chris.
BERP.
B-E-R-P.
Okay.
Slightly not spelled correctly, but, you know, it's one of those little, what do you call those things?
Acronyms.
Not pseudonyms. Not acronyms.
Acronyms, yeah.
You know, one of those things that that you know, you remember things with. You know, like the guy in the Grand.
Yeah. That long list of
guys
in the book.
All right.
Yeah,
we have no idea what we're talking about, but you know what we're talking about. So anyhow, it is BERP, and here is what he says it is. All right, let's say somebody's made a bet in a pot limit game, and you want to raise pot. All right, let's just say you're Gambit, because that's what Gambit does all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he never calls. It's always bet pot.
he's a good player.
Yeah, he is. So here is the formula. It is the bet times 3. All right, so let's say he's betting $10. So that's 30.
Yeah.
Right? Check my math for me, because I'm not good at carrying the 1.
Yeah, I know. Your math is not your first language. So
okay.
Bet times 3 is 30.
All right, plus the rest of the bets on the table already in that round.
Oh,
so if two other people had
already lost me.
Oh, come on. Stay with me. So if two other people had already called $10, you add that 20 to the 30. So now it's 50, right?
All right, so it's 30 plus the 10 that's out, the 20 that's out there, so 50.
Right. Plus what's already in the pot. Say there's $50 in the pot.
Okay.
So it's 30 plus 20 plus 50, that's 100. The bet is 100. It's that easy. And the all burp right. comes from B, 3, kind of reversed.
Yeah.
And then R for the rest of the bets and P for the pot. Burp. It's easy.
All right.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Just don't think. Just don't spell it out B-U-R-P and think U means under for something.
Okay.
You know, yeah. The under the gun bed or something. Well, that is pretty easy if you can. So if there are no other bets, he just bets $10 and no one else called and someone else wants to raise. So it's just his bet times 3 plus what's in the pot. So,
yeah.
All right, cool. All right, we'll have to remember that.
You may have possibly learned something on Annie Up this week.
Yeah, we'll use the rest of the show for knowledge. But, you know, while you were traveling home from that, I was traveling down to Sarasota to play in One Eye Jack's Annie Up Tour event.
In a misguided attempt to knock me off of second place in the Annie Up Poker Tour Player of the Year standings. I gotta say that now because I will not be there ever again.
I had a good time. It was a pretty busy night down there. Pretty much every table was used. And so my only interesting thing I just wanted to bring up real quick was one of those small world moments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting at a table, and I'm getting pretty short stacked, and some people were limping, and I had enough to make it like 10x, and I wanted to just do a wicked squeeze play and get a bunch of money. And I had two really tight players on my left in the blinds. So I was like, all right, I'm going to shove here with ace-queen. It's funny that you mentioned before, you know, who goes all in with ace-queen against aces, you know what I mean? Because sure enough, the big blind wakes up with pocket aces, and I have ace-queen and get knocked out. But the guy who knocks me out had a Yukon hat on. And I said to him, "Hey, man, you know where are you? You know, you're just a fan of Connecticut, or are you from there?" He's like, "No, I'm from there." And I'm like, "Really? Where are you from?" And it turns out we're from the same hometown.
Wow.
And that is so weird. And my wife Jean was there with us, and she was playing, and she's from that same hometown too. And she actually went out 17th out of like 93 players, and she had a really bad beat, Queens versus Ace-7, and the guy rivered an ace. Otherwise, she'd have been in the money. But, you know, we're all from the same town, and it was so weird at the same table like that. And she ended up playing at his table later on too. That's just so weird. I mean, I have no great funny story like yours, and, but that is pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, think about all the places in the world that are playing poker in Florida, and I sit down at this guy's table, and we're both from the same town in Connecticut. It's so weird.
Small world after all.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's New York City, you know what I mean? These are small towns, and so it was that was pretty cool, but right about that moment when I was finding that out, I was finding out you won basically $1,100. And I was like, oh, he's going to hold that over me forever. All right, so let's see what's happening on the Ante Up News Desk today.
The Excalibur Casino in Las Vegas, which famously dismissed its live poker room in favor of one run completely by poker tech machines, is reversing course, the San Jose Mercury News reports. The poker tech tables will be removed this weekend and replaced by live tables with dealers.
That is not surprising. I mean, when we first had him on, talked about that same item on the show a while back, we even then were like, oh, no way, really? And that didn't take very long.
No, yeah. It's, you know, and we're going to be out there for the dismantling, so maybe we should go over there and watch. But you know, the interesting thing, too, if you go to our forum, too, one of our longtime listeners, Nick, just recently played on these tables and loves them and was a little surprised that some people don't. So to each its own, right?
Yeah, it is surprising because, you know, I guess when you go to Vegas, you want to experience Vegas. You don't want to experience the internet. You know what I mean? So I guess that makes sense.
All right. Kansas Attorney General Steve Six says Candu, a poker game played for money in bars in that state, is illegal, and that anyone offering it or playing it could face criminal charges, according to the Wichita Eagle. Shane McCullough, creator of the Candu Challenge, in which players get a peek at the deck of the cards before it's dealt, said he expected a legal challenge and is looking forward to explaining the game in court.
This just in, Shane McCullough is going to rename his challenge Can't Do. Yeah, that's not surprising either. You know, it's like all these things that we talked about before. We were all wondering, you know, how, you know, first we thought, how is this legal? And then with the Excalibur thing, we're like, how's this going to survive? And now both those things went exactly how we thought they would. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm actually looking forward to Mr. McCullough actually getting in court and explaining this and seeing how it plays out. I mean, I think most of us agree that the quick flash of the deck is probably not enough to make it a skill game any more than it already is.
Yeah.
So, but you know, who knows?
Man.
And then finally, our World Series updates. If you don't want to be spoiled, turn off the podcast right now. Jeffrey Lisandro wins his third bracelet and is firmly in lead for Player of the Year. Three bracelets, Chris, in 1 year.
How could he possibly not win? You know what I mean? If he doesn't win Player of the Year, like somebody wins the main event, I mean, unless it's someone who's already got two and they win the main event for three, I mean, there's just no way this guy should not be Player of the Year. He won every discipline in stud.
Yeah.
In one World Series.
And he's made three final tables and won them all, so it's not like he got and when he gets the final table, he's money.
He's a closer.
Yeah.
He's like Kira Cedric.
Awesome. But, you know, Phil Ivey and Brock Parker already have two, too. So, you know, they win one more. Although we're running out of events. We only got a couple left. So
also, what's his name? Greg FBT Mueller.
Oh, yes, right. He just won a second,
He just won a second, too. So, man, we should have made that bet with Bodog or whatever that was.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if someone does it, do you get to keep cashing in when someone else does it on those bets?
That would be a great bet, wouldn't
it? That would be an awesome bet.
And then finally, Ante Up friend Kenna James makes the final table in our national game, Raz.
Were you going to say any more after that? It sounded like you were going to say something else.
I was just going to end with Raz.
Yeah, isn't that remarkable? My favorite thing, one of my favorite moments in my poker career was bluffing him in Raz on in the Apes at that time, a long, long time ago when he was playing in the event with us. And I had nothing. I had three pair, and I check-raised him, and it got him to lay it down. He had an eight. So if I could beat him in Raz, then I could go to the final table, baby.
but you can't beat Jeffrey Lissandro because he ended up winning that event,
that's
right?
That's right, he did. He's unbelievable, that Lissandro. He couldn't win anything for 20 years, then he wins one, and now he wins three. Unreal.
Just never know how it goes.
That's awesome. All right, so you know what, Scott? I don't hear the hotline ringing.
Well, I'm sure it's we can blame it on SiteGround, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything and anything that goes wrong in life now is because of SiteGround. I'm asking the Antiup Nation to ban SiteGround for their unlawful practices.
All right, so no hotline this week, but go ahead and give it a ring, 813-448-1120, and maybe, just maybe, that phone call will get through to us, and we can get it on a future show.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I got a headache today, so I'm blaming that on SiteGround, too. Anything. Anything that goes wrong, man.
I'm blaming those bad chops on SiteGround.
Yes, yes. How you got screwed? SiteGround screwed
yes,
you.
Yes. And the fact that Jeffrey Lissandro only has three bracelets, not four this year, SiteGround's problem.
SiteGround's all their problem. Yep. Kenneth James didn't win his first bracelet? That's SiteGround.
All right, Chris, but we do have a mailbag this week.
Yeah, SiteGround couldn't, because this happened, we got this before SiteGround screwed us.
Yes, it got through before the gauntlet was thrown down. and it's not really a question, but it's a somewhat humorous story from a longtime listener, Ken Engstrock. And, all right, I don't know if I should be worried about this, Chris, but he was dreaming about me.
I've never dreamt about you, and I'm your business partner, and I've known you for almost, what, 6-7 years? So this is sick.
But you've had plenty of nightmares about me.
Yes, but those are all while I'm awake.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, Ken dreamt about me, and you know, that's sweet. But it's kind of a funny dream. So let me read it quickly here, and we'll see what other people think. All right, now he says to put it in perspective, these three things happened to him the day before he went to sleep and had sweet, sweet thoughts about me. One, he was going to a bachelor party at Arlington Racecourse in Chicago.
Yep.
Two, he had a conversation about Brett Favre.
Yep.
And three, after a long hiatus from poker forums, he signed up for the Antiup forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum.
Okay.
And, all right, so those were three things all were going through his head when he went into deep REM sleep and generated this fairly hilarious story. So he says the dream starts off with him going to the racetrack for the bachelor party. All right, sounds pretty normal so far. Cool.
Yep.
He's early, so he gets his ticket for his box and wanders in. It sounds like he's in a luxury box. Very nice.
Yeah, nice.
For some reason, though, the track has been replaced by a football field. The Packers are playing the Dolphins. All right, so he's at a race course, but now it's a football game. The Packers are playing the Dolphins, you know, because that always happens in Chicago, right?
Right.
And Brett Favre is getting into a fight with some defender. Now, I'm hoping that Favre is playing for the Dolphins in this dream. And just kill him in this fight. All right. But he says his eyes wander from the action on the field. And at the far end of the stadium, he sees the sign that says Tampa Bay Downs.
Oh, my God.
Wow, talk about a geographically messed up dream, man. All right, he says, all of a sudden he looks around the corner from where he's standing, and there's an open-air poker room with about 30 tables set up.
Wow, open air.
Outdoor poker.
Wow.
That could never happen here in Florida in the summer, but
no way.
Maybe in Chicago. So he thinks to himself, holy crap! I can go play some cards before everyone else from the bachelor party shows up. Well played, Ken. Well played. And he says, maybe Scott will be around and we can play some horse or 08 since he's always here. You know, and by always here, I'm assuming he means the Silk Spoke Room at Tampa Bay Downs, not in his dream.
Yeah, right. I hope so.
Really kind of weird. So he says he's all pumped up and starts walking into the poker room. At that point, his 3-year-old daughter walks into the bedroom, wakes him up to tell him she leaked through a pull-up.
Oh.
Sigh. Oh, well, back to reality, he says.
Whoa.
Look at that. He was just getting to the point where he felt me in 08. And his daughter comes in to say that she pee-peed.
Yeah, now his daughter's down to the felt, I guess.
Yeah.
Need to get some rubber sheets there.
Well, pretty wild, wacky dream there.
Yeah, that's pretty wacky that you were in someone's dream who listens to the show. I'm not sure how to... Oh, man. I don't know. I'm trying to put this all together, and it's not registering right. I'm just hoping that he, you know, had clothes on in the dream. That's the best part.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, it's early in the bachelor party, so yeah, I'm sure he was close to that point. All right, well, Ken, you're not dreaming. You've actually won some swag. maybe in your dream there'll be a swag wheel spinning, so go ahead and dream that tonight, because, you know, four people said they didn't like the swag wheel, so it's gone, so we don't have it anymore.
Yeah, but I was one of them, so that I was the most important vote in that, so.
So we are just going to reach under the swag shelf, and I'm going to grab you off a wonderful wheeler dealer, motorized dealer from the good folks at wheelrdealer.com, and maybe you can put that in your dream next time.
Yeah, put it under your pillow.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, The Case of the Musical Interlude. It's a no-limit hold'em cash game played with deep stacks and low stakes, $1, $2. I feel we have a relatively standard image here.
Surprising, to say the least.
Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one folds, and the middle position player raises it to six. I look down at ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds. Now, I could raise here or call with position, but because I'm in the mid position myself, I elect to raise and discourage any more players with a hand that I feel plays better heads up. I make it 14 to go. It folds all the way back around to the original raiser, who, as expected, calls.
I'm not afraid, sir.
Heads up, we see a flop of jack of spades, ace of hearts, ten of clubs, and our opponent checks. I figure he missed this by a mile, and in a moment of weakness, I check. The turn now is an 8 of clubs, and my opponent checks again. This time, I take advantage, and I bet $15, or about half the pot. He calls. The pot is now $61, and the river is the 7 of diamonds. My opponent, after a small delay, now bets out $44. So, what do you want to do now?
All right, Chris. Well, we mentioned that the site Grand was placing havoc with our show. People can download it. Post the forum, but leave it to Zorag to break through all the technological problems there and actually get a post in on our forum about this case.
Yeah, I think that the show came on just in time that people could actually hear it before this show and react to it too. So I think that was a combination of things. So I think we're all right. I think we're on the road to recovery.
All right, well, Zorag says, and I like this too, slap myself upside the head for checking the flop and fold, then slap myself again, and maybe one more time with the slapping. And I got to say, I got to agree here. I mean, we are easily fold, I think. I think we played this way too weak. We don't know where we are. We've got top pair, second kicker on a hugely dangerous board.
Yeah.
We got to call 44 bucks or raise, I guess, is another option, but wow. I don't know. I think we just need to put our tail between our legs and learn from this.
Checking an ace on the flop is common with a lot of the pros, but it has to be a flop that's not dangerous.
This flop, you
need to get some information here. We got no information, and we got no information from a call on the turn bet. We should have bet out on the flop. I'm folding too, and then moving on.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the pre-flop too, because I tell you, this is one of the leaks in my game that's really changed it lately, and I've been playing fairly well now. And I think this tip came from our good friend Lee Childs, who writes a great column in Annie Up Magazine. When I'm facing a raise, I get rid of these ace-queens, ace-jacks, even the Cosenza. I know that's blasphemy. But ace-tens, I just don't like to play those cards after a raise comes in. I mean, I understand people can raise with a wide range of hands, but they just get you in trouble when there's somebody who's already showing some strength, then they very well could have ace-king or a higher ace than you.
Yeah.
Now, I realize the bet was only $6 and the cards were suited, you know, which makes about a 78% difference. But I don't know. I wonder if you just fold pre-flop. I'm being way too tight, aren't I?
I don't think in a cash game, I don't think a fold is the right move here. Plus, we really don't know about the middle position player who raised first, as well, you know, as what type of player he was.
True.
But at least a call here, and I don't dislike the re-raise either, because the person could be loose and you wanted to get heads up. But ace queen of diamonds in a cash game, which is deep stacked,
right,
I'm not folding that. But he misplays it after the flop. That's the problem.
And I guess you're right, yeah, because, you know, he raised preflop and then just got a call, so that gives you lots of information, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he has aces or kings there.
Right, ace-king, for that matter.
Or even ace-king, because he probably would have re-raised again. But, you know, even if he did, even if he just smooth calls, I doubt he smooth calls. I doubt he checks that flop if he has ace-king or whatever. And then on the turn, he probably would raise your bet. I don't know. I just feel like a call there or a raise is not. I would not fold ace, queen of diamonds in a cash game, but I would fold now where they are now. I would definitely fold that bet in the end.
Okay. And we totally agree that we would have bet on that flop.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's listen to the result and see what happens in part two.
I know what I want to do now. I want to crawl under a rock and die. First off, I didn't protect my hand on a vulnerable board with a decent holding. Second, when I did bet the turn, I underbet the pot for my holding. And now I'm left in a situation where I have too much information to process.
Consider that a mistake.
Did he see my check on the flop as having no ace? He called my turn bet. Was that a draw? Lots of draws got there on the river. Is he bluffing me because of my perceived weakness? Is this a pressure bet or a get-paid-off bet? Well, I guess I'll never know the answer to these questions because I'm going to fold. Could I have won the hand had I played it better? Probably. Can I make a hero call and feel justified? Not really. Even if it is a bluff, it's probably a bad call on my part. I let him get there with so many probable holdings, and what can I beat? Since he checked the flop and the turn on this board, he doesn't have a set. But I still have to contend with ace-jack, ace-10, jack-10, 8-7, 10-8, not to mention 9-anything. I can really only beat a bluff from ace-king. And if he did have ace-king, why such an elaborate bluff of calling the turn and then taking the lead on the river? That's pretty advanced for a $2 table. So I give up the pot, and I make a note to not play a hand that poorly in the future. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com congratulating WSOP bracelet winner Ray Foley.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Well played, Columbo. Well, I mean, not really well played, but well played in the end analysis, realizing that you didn't play it well.
Why does he get himself into trouble all the time? Does he do it just for the show? Did he literally sacrifice $29 for the mystery? Or, I mean, really, why did you do that? I don't know, but at least you got away from it. You had to get away from it. We don't know what he had. We'll never know,
yeah.
But
that's
we
the
had
thing.
To beat.
We don't know whether $29 was actually a good result losing in this.
Yeah.
You know, because if we would have bet out that flop and get re-raised, I mean, I don't know what you would have done then. I think you'd probably have to call a reasonable re-raise on the flop because you still had a straight draw.
Yeah. You still had top pair and a gut shot. So.
So theoretically, I guess you could have lost more playing it our way.
Well, anyway, it was a good mystery, one of those mysteries where you just chalk it up to learning a mistake and trying never do that mistake again. And I think he will. I don't think we're ever going to see another mystery like that. Of course, I don't know what the musical interlude is, but whatever.
I think he just does that to mess with you.
Yeah, he does. He messes with me. The detective. It's like, you know, yeah, it's like I'm a one-time criminal who he doesn't trust. You know what I mean? So the detective has to put out these... you know, these feelers to just screw with my head every once in a while, make sure I don't do anything wrong, you know, so.
And that's not all. Buy today and we'll set you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Hey, Chris, it's easy to find a wealth of poker information on the internet these days, but it's not so easy is synthesizing the best of it so you don't waste your time looking around for what is worth your time. But last month, a new website launched with the goal of doing just that, and joining us today to talk about it is Bill Siebert, CEO of Poker Curious. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so Bill, I know it's not easy to explain everything Poker Curious is in one question, but take a couple breaths and give us the nickel tour of what our listeners will find when they go to PokerCurious.com.
Well, I'll give you a little background. The genesis for Poker Curious came out of my time at Card Runners. Card Runners, as a lot of people know, is the largest poker training site online. And I was their first full-time employee and operations manager, and was there during a time of tremendous growth. They went from about 1,000 members up to 10,000, you know, monthly subscribing members who were, you know, avid about improving their poker games. And with that growth and with the, you know, the increase in membership, you have opportunities for community and interaction. And that was my main focus as operations manager, other than the logistics of running a business and customer service, was, you know, what is involved with poker community? What is involved with people coming together online around a shared passion or interest? And we tried to implement some of those elements of creating community and how people come together. In the forums, you would see over and over again the same sorts of questions and issues would come up, and they would, everyone is sort of in a different stage of their poker learning curve, and they all come to Card Runners or some other site, you know, in a different stage of their learning curve, and but they want answers. They want to accelerate their growth as a poker player and to make connections with other people. It's not simply about, you know, I'm here at my computer and all I care about is making money. There's more to the process of playing poker than simply, you know, racking up a win and dominating your opponent. And so all these sorts of elements bubbled in my head for quite a while. I was at Card Runners for nearly a couple years, and when I moved on, I immediately wanted to take some of those ideas and distill them and sort of, as you said, synthesize what it is that people are looking for in the poker world. And the three elements that I identified were elements around information and resources, and there was a huge following for the poker culture, which you participate in, which is you know, news and information, but it's also around stories and people and connecting to other people and following their history and the celebrity built up around those who are successful within the game. And then lastly, the third important part is the community, in that while I'm here by myself, you know, locked away in my office and in front of my two screens and, you know, occasionally playing poker but doing a lot of business, I may be antisocial within my physical bricks and mortar world, but I still want to connect with other people. And so it was to bring together those sort of three elements of poker information, poker culture, and poker community all in one easy-to-use place. And, you know, frankly, you know, most poker players are lazy. And so if I could provide one easy-to-use place that could bring together all the resources that people need to advance themselves along their poker learning curve, their poker experience, and make it more pleasurable, then I would be bringing value to people.
Okay, well, that's a real interesting website now because of all the things that you offer, but how do you choose the content? Like, what's the criteria? How do you go about, you know, doing something like that?
Well, we developed the website over about 15 months. Probably took longer than I anticipated up front, but I think the time that it took was necessary for us to organize the material. For instance, you know, if you say I'm going to represent the whole online poker world, well, that's a pretty intimidating project. And so the first step was to try and break down the elements of the online poker world, and we did that within 25 different categories. And there are all kinds of categories on our website. Things like the most popular poker blogs out there, and not just Doyle Brunson or Daniel Negreanu, who are known the worldwide, you know, and are extremely popular. There are also blogs by very well-respected, successful online players that we've researched over months and months of searching around, and have the most comprehensive list of poker blogs by well-known poker professionals online and live. But we've created 25 different categories, and then each of those categories we've researched as deeply as we could give in that time. But it's an organic process. That's the benefit of the site, is that it will grow with time. You know, in the month that we've been here, we've had other sites and people come along. Got an email yesterday that said, you know, please add my blog to your listing. Now, he wasn't a well-known player, but he recognizes that he wants to be, get more attention for his blog, and so he's coming to us to see if we'll list it amongst our listings. But, you know, if you go to our podcast page, you know, you will quickly see Ante Up podcast listed. And so each of the different categories within the online poker world, we try and research deeply. We have links that go directly to each of the businesses or websites. We have descriptions. In the case of podcasts for Ante Up, we try and give an accurate schedule if there is one available. And we usually give a ranking or a rating that's a sort of a comparative. It's not sort of an objective thing based on some finite criteria, but more a comparative rating so that people get a general sense of, okay, well, you know, if someone's putting out podcasts every week or someone does a podcast once every 6 months and doesn't take it very seriously, we're going to give a better rating to someone who, you know, is professional and consistent and does a good job of what they're doing. So we try and give a comparative rating to help people, you know, identify the podcast in this particular instance of what they might want to check out.
Now, you mentioned those ratings, and I was going to ask you about that. Is that a collective opinion of a staff, or is one reviewer listening to this and making that decision? Or what goes into deciding, besides just comparatively, what kind of rating a poker site or a podcast or a magazine gets?
Yeah, it's a collective decision. I can't say that we spent hours debating it. I hired, over the 15 months, probably 7 or 8 individuals to help me research all the information and organize it and distill it. And it took many months of collecting the information and organizing it. It's a work in progress, and it never is complete because, you know, sites don't stand still. They're constantly changing, they're upgrading, they're improving. So a rating or the description or any of the information is only as good as, as you are at that point in time. And as we get more information, our rating changes. But it was the ratings for each of the categories was done by individuals and then reviewed by me in the end analysis before it was put up on the site. We've adjusted ratings on our pretty regular basis as we interact with the businesses. So we are developing relationships and developing our knowledge base and familiarity with the whole online poker world as we go through this process. So while we did it from an outsider from the beginning, now we're starting to work with some of these sites, and they are approaching us saying, you know, we can give you more accurate information or more updates about, you know, what our business is about. And so as that comes in, then we're able to evolve the rating and make it more accurate on a comparative basis.
Well, speaking of changing ratings and things that change on the internet, your site has a feature that lets users know what's most popular at the time. So what is most popular, do you know?
Yeah, well, we have a top 10 rating on our homepage. Again, while we have 80 pages within our site of information and breakdowns from whether it's, you know, purchasable resources like books and DVDs, software and hardware and poker tables you can buy. And we have, you know, as I said, we have 25 main informational categories in addition to our own content and our own community. But we try and also create sort of shortcuts for people because, you know, frankly, they don't have the time to pour through 225 different poker blogs. So they're going to trust us to sort of give us a shortcut of what we feel are the better blogs or podcasts or books or whatever category it is, rate back sites and things like that. In the blogs category, we have them featured on the homepage, top 10 listings, and we have Daniel Negreanu is the most popular poker blog, and he's obviously one of the most visible players in the poker world, and that's no surprise. What's kind of interesting is that Patrick Antonius is our second ranked blog, and yet his isn't current. It's archive. And so people are so drawn to him as a player, as a character, as a poker stud, you know? I mean, girls love him. And so they're willing to go back a year and a half ago to read old blogs of his just for any taste of his that he ranks second in all of our blogs read.
Wow.
In the first month. And you know, that will evolve over time. We'll see as the months go by if that changes. But it's I find it fascinating that normally people are most drawn to blogs that are current and that people are actively updating. They want to follow their careers and their lives, and that's why Twitter's taken off. It, you know, brings it to an even, you know, more immediate following of their lives. And so I found it fascinating that even though his blog isn't, he doesn't have a current blog that he's keeping up on a very regular basis, people were very thirsty to have any sort of additional information and insight into his world, even if it's a year old.
All right, now you've partnered with several big companies. You mentioned obviously you came from Card Runners, and they're a big part of this. Other companies like Poker Pro Labs. One of the issues that we deal with here at Annie Up, and I'm curious how you deal with it, how do you balance developing rich partnerships that will improve your user experience while at the same time being objective when you're doing ratings and reviews?
We're not the final adjudicator. We're not the final judge on what site you should play at or what book you should buy or what blog you should read. We're presenting a greater depth and variety of options than any poker player, online poker player has ever had before. There's no one who has ever created a site with this depth of information. So while there's some benefit to us to lead people in certain directions if we negotiate relationships with them, that's not really our, I mean, it is a revenue motivation, but it's not, the ultimate purpose is to help players and allow them to make informed decisions. And so the relationships that we develop with individual sites is to create greater value for them. For instance, trying to create a discount, let's say, to sign up to our Card Runners, or as we did, we were the first site to negotiate a discount off of their sign-up fee. Well, that creates value for people who visit Poker Curious if they're interested in signing up for Card Runners. I'm not saying that Card Runners is the only training site or the site that's better than all others necessarily. I'm simply saying that, well, we're doing our part to try and create more value or more information for you to make an informed decision. So while there is a balance that you play of, okay, well, are they giving me money to give them a better review? I think that's a valid question to ask. But I think that people are smart enough in today's age, they're used to being sort of pummeled when they go onto poker sites, you know, by banner ads and promotions left and right. And it's something we've really worked hard at trying to have a clean presentation on the site, not, you know, having ads everywhere you look, and give an opportunity to make their choice. So I'm not limiting to say, I mean, for instance, we have 20, let me go to the page here. I think we have 22, and it's always changing. There's a new training site that's coming out next week or in a week or two that we'll add a new review for when it goes live on July 1st. But we have 24 listed. Well, I know if I were to talk to Card Runners, for instance, they wouldn't want me to list 24 because they don't want competitors to be listed. But that's not my mission. My mission is to share as much of information with people who come to Poker Curious so they can make an informed decision. And I have some sites listed that aren't even current that I think people would still find some value if they visited it, like Patrick Antonius's blog. It's not current, but people can still go back and find value from it. And so there's the priority is on information and allowing people to make their own decision. The more that sites work with us, the more we can better represent them, but not to the exclusion of hurting other sites or their ratings.
Now, you mentioned that a lot of the free stuff on your site, and your site is completely free to end users, just like our magazine PokerCast are, but obviously we have to pay our bills, and you have to pay your bills somehow, so what's the business model of Poker Curious?
Yeah, it's a multi-tiered business model. There are multiple ways that we derive revenue. One, which almost every poker site out there delves into, is the affiliate model, which is you're rewarded for, you know, bringing people to the established revenue generating sites. In our case, you know, we can take it a few steps further than what most poker sites or poker affiliate sites do, in that anyone who makes revenue within the poker world, we can negotiate a relationship with to, you know, benefit if we bring them business. And beyond just the traditional situations of, you know, you sign up to a particular playing site and, you know, you get your piece back or reward back for bringing them that business. We have relationships with training sites, with rakeback sites, with playing sites. We derive revenue from purchases of things like books and DVDs and software and merchandise. So those are, you know, those are traditional methods of revenue generation for a lot of poker sites. We just have taken a few steps further. Then we have limited opportunities for banner display and sponsorships on pages that, you know, we're still negotiating with. We want to, you know, partner with reputable sites that, you know, are interested in increased presence on the site. So as our traffic grows, we can you know, negotiate those relationships with top sites and sites interested in enhanced and premium positioning on the site. So those are the two main revenue generators presently. We have goals to introduce, you know, for pay services down the road for more advanced features. But that's sort of a longer range goal once we have a thriving large community of many, many thousands.
How did this idea come up for you? Was this sort of a frustrating thing, or was it a necessity thing? How do you come up with this kind of idea?
Well, after I departed CardRunners, I felt a little bit, a little bit lost. I was so focused, so focused for so long. You know, it's pretty consuming to be an operations manager for, you know, a large site and one that has a large community, because their thirst for knowledge and their thirst for community is so strong. And they, you know, you can get just completely sucked into. And I sometimes felt I almost lost myself in trying to satisfy that. The thirst for content, the thirst for connection. And so as I came out of that period, I started to look around at what areas hadn't been satisfied within the poker world. And that's when I started to put the pieces together for Poker Curious, in that I didn't want it to be this micro-focused site. I mean, there are some good sites out there that are probably in their individual categories do a superior job than what we do. But they're very focused, and you know, it's very hard to find them. You know, we're trying to list them on our site to give them proper credit and help people find those good resources. But we wanted to be something where a one-stop shop, where you can find out, you know, that there are poker player identities, for instance. People love to know the identity of high-stakes cash and MTT players. But, you know, do they have one source to go to find that? Well, we did months of research to find the most exhaustive list that exists online, or poker comics or poker movies. Well, sure, you can go to Amazon, or sure, you can go to all these individual destinations to find the information. But if you have it all at your fingertips on one site, doesn't it make sense to save your time to go there to do it? So it was out of that thinking that motivated me to put in all the effort and 15 months of development to create a one-stop shop for all your online poker needs.
All right, Bill. Well, we appreciate you taking some time today. I know, obviously, you touched on the future a little bit. Close it out a little bit by telling us what are some of those ideas still noodling around your head that you have that you hope to accomplish in the future?
Well, I'd need a whole another hour to go into those, but it's being responsive. There's not one, I don't have a particular agenda with Poker Curious. The concept is very simple. If you're curious about poker, you come to the site. As people come to the site and say, well, you're not covering Twitter, for instance. You don't have a page of all the Twitter addresses. And I know that's very trendy and popular nowadays. Well, that's something we'll be adding. It's in response to the people who come to our site saying, well, you've done an awesome job so far, but I want this or I need this. We created poker questions, the most popular poker questions that people typically ask, and that's an organic process. So as people come to the site and say, well, you have a lot of information, but this is my question or this is my need. It's in our reaction to their input and their questions and their desires for the poker world and what they need out of it. It's out of that exchange of ideas that will sort of, as we respond to it, will take us into new directions as we move forward. So it's less of my agenda of saying, well, this is what I think you should know, or it's more in reaction to their input about, well, what do you want in your poker site? What do you want in your online poker experience? And where do you want to take it? What's important to you? And that will be the driving force in deciding where Poker Curious goes from here.
Well, terrific, Bill. Again, we appreciate you joining us. And the website, again, is pokercurious.com. And we wish you the best of luck. It's a great site. And keep in touch.
I certainly will, Scott. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate the time. And definitely come on by and check out the site.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
This is Cowboy Kenna James, and you're listening to my favorite poker podcast, Ante Up. Remember, if you want to be in the game, don't forget to ante. Ante up.
All right, we got a 1-3 no-limit cash game hand this week, Chris, from a local Indian casino in California. Sabobo, California, he says. Comes from our good friend Ed Locke out in Redlands, California. And 1-3, it's a little different. I mean, I know some rooms spread it now, but you're kind of used to the 1-2.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, last Saturday when I was at Sarasota and got knocked out, I wanted to play the 1-3, but they didn't have any seats, so I had to play the 1-2 with the $60 buy-in. I didn't like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 1-3 probably plays a little bigger than 1-2.
Yeah, it plays a little bigger. That's what I was hoping for.
Right. All right, he says, even better, he says, the players are not very good in this game, Chris.
Oh, okay.
You will routinely hear Scott mess up the hand of the week. You will also routinely hear someone say, I always win with 8-4, I'll call an all-in with it. And they will! Oh, man, I love playing with those people. Actually, I hate playing with those people.
Yeah, I hate playing with those people.
All right, so he sits down to play the bounty tournament. Now he's got $100. He's built his bankroll up to 320. He's a big stack at the table. Very nice playing. All right, the hand's limp to a, quote, crazy Asian guy.
Okay.
He's played 95% of the hands. He calls pre-flop raises with 8-5 offsuit. Not ace 5. 8-5 offsuit, Chris.
Okay.
That guy makes it 7 to go.
All right.
Race. All right?
Yeah.
Our hero looks down to see Jack of Spades, Jack of Hole.
Oh. Jack of Hole? Jack of Hole? What the hell's a Jack of Hole?
Oh, man, look, I'm not even in Vegas yet, and I'm already drunk.
Jack of Hole.
Jack of Spades, Jack of Hearts. Wow.
Ah, okay.
I will be surprised if we have even one listener left at the end of this hand of the week. All right, so what do you do here against a quote-unquote crazy Asian guy?
Well, normally when I have the jack a hole, I like to raise. So, you know, if he's crazy and he calls raises with 8-5, that tells you something. But I don't know what happens when he actually makes the raise himself. It's hard to...
Very good point, yes.
If I know I'm going to be heads up with him, I'll probably just call and see a flop and then react. But if I need to thin the field more, if I got some other guys who might be willing to call 7 without any hesitation, I might pump it up to 20. It just depends on what's behind me. I don't know where we are on the table in relation to the blinds and stuff.
All right, we'll find out that soon enough. But our hero does make it 20 to go.
Oh, okay. That sounds about right.
Folds to the small blind, who's an internet-type kid who has a crew sitting behind him. You know, nothing
crew.
Is better than showing up at a 1-3 no-limit cash game with a crew cheering you on.
All right, we can go to Sizzler tonight. The hell?
Oh, all right. So the small blind kid calls. Our initial raiser calls $60 in the pot. If we go to a flop with queen of hearts, 8 of hearts, 4 of hearts.
Not really a great flop. And
not against these type players, I don't think.
No, because the small blind could easily have a suited ace or an ace 10 with a heart, you know, ace of hearts or something. So. It's not a great flop for us, but we are in position. So I'm going to wait to see what they do before I give you what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. Very smart. you know, in particularly this is the kind of flop that you like to flop the nuts. I mean, you always want to flop the nuts. But, you know, against these type players,
yeah,
that's where you want to flop this. Because, you know, if you put any bet here, they're going to raise you, come over the top, and be nice, so nice, just once. To call that and table the nuts and smack them back down to oblivion.
Yeah.
But I don't think we can do that here with, you know, an overcard and the flush draw. Even with the flush draw, it's still the third nut.
Yeah.
It's going to be rough. All right. So the internet kid checks. The other guy bets $10. And, of course, our hero says this is kind of his standard bet on every flop he sees.
Here's the thing I'm doing. I'm calling. I'm not raising because... For some reason, even though we've brought up the original raiser a couple of times already now, I'm just a little worried about the blind, believe it or not. And then even if the blind does get out of the way, I don't mind just calling $10 here and seeing another card because he could be on a draw, this guy. He's kind of wacky. He could just have one heart in his hand. And you know. So I'm just going to call the 10. I mean, I have a pretty big stack, 320. I think I can absorb whatever this guy's got in front of him. If I make a mistake anyway. But I think I'll just call the $10 and see what happens, you know. Make it look like maybe I'm slow playing the nuts, you know. So that's all I would do.
I'm totally with you. I'm going to call here because, again, raising here it just opens up the betting for... I mean, obviously the internet kid can still raise anyhow. So
yeah.
I think I'll just put the 10 in and, you know, if I have to sacrifice it, I'd sacrifice it. All right. Well, our hero says he grabs 2 stacks of 20, goes to push them in, knocks over one of them, and says 20. Oops, a live misclick. So it's $20 to go by accident. So I guess that's a min raise, right?
Yeah.
And both guys call, Chris.
That's pretty scary. I mean, unless we improve dramatically, like pairing the board or making a third jack, I might be done with this hand. You know, and if another heart comes, I don't think my jack is good. My jack of hearts.
Yeah. Wild. All right. Well, at least we only, bumped an extra 10 to this pot than we should have.
Yeah.
Although it looks like he was going to raise a lot more. So, but the pot's $120. The turn comes to 7 of hearts.
I'm not happy now.
Yeah. Our flush got there, but I can't think we're happy, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're stuck with that hand now. We can't redraw to anything. We're stuck with the jack high flush and, well, queen high with a jack in our hand, but, I'm just not happy with it. I mean, I feel like one of these guys might have the king of hearts or the ace of hearts, and I'm just not happy with it now. If there's any kind of heat, I mean, if they bet like $10, whatever, I'll call because there's so much out there, you're getting 12 to 1 on your money. But if they put like, if they go all in or something, I'm not happy with my hand. So that's just my first reaction.
Yeah, I totally agree. And does it change at all, however, when both of our opponents check to us?
No, I'm happy to check behind because no other card. If, let's just say that we're not beat, no other card's going to beat us unless they have a set. You know, if they had a set, they would have played this totally differently.
Right.
You know, if they had two pair, they probably would have played it differently. So, really, if they check to me, I'd be happy to check it down and win a $120 pot if that's what's going to happen. So, I'm not betting. I mean, I have no reason to bet here. I'm only going to get called by a better hand.
That's correct. That's correct.
Mean, really, what are you hoping to find out by betting 40 now or betting
80?
No,
I think this is an early Christmas gift or Hanukkah gift or Kwanzaa gift, whichever your beliefs allow you to accept. Because any kind of bet here, I think you're right. We're going to have to really seriously consider laying this down.
Yep.
But I'm quite happy to take the free card here. And, the best case scenario is the ace or king of hearts comes off.
Yep.
And I feel a little bit better about my hand if somebody bets on the river. But, wow, I'll take this free card any
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking. That, I mean, who knows? Maybe the ace or the king of hearts will show up and you'll have that much more confidence. So I would just take the card.
Okay. Of course, our hero did not call us in the middle of the hand, did not use his lifeline, and bets $40 into this pot.
Yeah, that's weird. That's what I said, too. 40 or 80. You don't want to do something like that because you might have to kiss it goodbye now.
Yeah.
So what happens?
Well, luckily, he doesn't have to kiss it goodbye yet because he just gets two callers.
Oh, jeez. See, this is not good.
Some serious dog walking going on here, isn't there?
Yeah, see, it feels awful lot like that. Why bet there? I can't think of any good reason to bet there.
And the question is, who's walking who? And maybe everybody's walking everybody.
They all think they're walking everybody.
Yeah, can you imagine if one guy had the ace and the other one had the king in the
end? Oh, man, this is sick.
Wow. All right, so 240 in the pot. The river comes, the nine of hearts.
Flush on board, straight flush possibilities now.
Internet kid moves all in for 180.
Oh, yeah, we're laying this down.
Our other opponent gets out of the way.
Yeah, we're laying it down.
And our hero throws up.
He throws up. Yeah, yeah. See, why lose the 40 from before and not have to fold now and to call another 180? Oh, my God, that's all your profit, essentially. That's all your profit.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. You'd be actually down for the night now if you lost this hand and called.
All right, well,
laying it down.
All right, he makes an interesting point here that he says, wouldn't the ace of hearts bet for value here? And it says 180 too high for a value bet.
You know, I've played with internet guys, young internet guys, a lot online, and that's exactly what they do online. They overbet online. I mean, they always do it. Every time in a hand with somebody and they got the nuts and you've got a borderline call, they always shove. And then you think, why would they bet so much? They must be bluffing. And you call and they got the nuts.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just not worth it. We've lost $67 on this hand. We still have $260 in front of us. We're still up $160 on the day. Just move along. Jacks are a terrible hand and I would have probably bet a little more on the flop to try to get somebody to do something, maybe, I don't know. But the turn, when the turn came, I would have checked. I would not have bet out again. And now, look at you staring at a $180 bet, So obviously, he knew you bet into him when you had when the seven came. So for him to do that, he's not worried about you having the ace or the king of hearts.
Right.
There's just no way. You bet on the turn he called you. So if he calls you on the turn and then shoves, he's telling you he's not worried about you having the king or the ace.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's what he's telling me. So if he's bluffing, it's a great bluff. But I just can't see it's not worth it to call 180 here to me. I don't think it is.
Now, it is an interesting board to bluff on because, people, and usually at the lower levels, people go, somebody will say, ah.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to be chopping this up, and then some idiot, bets a lot, and then people go, oh, man, you're trying to push this off.
Yeah.
But the reason that you can't buy that here is that you're betting into somebody who's really kind of led the action.
Yeah.
So that's a real ballsy bet if that's really what's going on here.
Yeah. I just have to let it go.
Yeah. All right. Well, our hero feels sick but decides to call to make himself sicker. And his opponent's crew goes nuts as he yells, I flopped the nuts! And tables the ace of hearts and the king of hearts.
See, that's exactly what I said earlier, too. I was afraid of the small blind. I was afraid of the small blind, which is why I only wanted to call that other guy's bet instead of he min-raised, but he was going to raise more than that. That's exactly what I was afraid of. And it's funny, too. I had this exact same thing happen, almost exact same thing happened to me. At Sarasota, I had pocket tens, and there was a raise, and I just called, and then the blinds called, and a flop came three spades, all unders, and I didn't have a ten of spades in my hand. So I bet like 10 to see where I was, and I got two callers, and one of them was the blinds. And then the turn was another spade, so we all checked. And then the river was a 10, and it gave me three 10s. And I was like, so I check, and then the guy bets 15. And I'm like, you know, it's only 15. There's like 40 or 50 in the pot. I got to see it. I want to see the spade. And, of course, he had the nuts. He flopped the nuts. He had ace, deuce, of spades in his hand, and he was in the blind. So that's exactly what I was thinking of as you were starting his hand off saying the small blind called. I was thinking he had a suited ace. I didn't think he had ace-king because you think he might re-raise there. But since he's out of position, I kind of like the call and just see what happens. So kid played it well. But I would never, ever have bet on the turn, and I certainly wouldn't have called the 180 on the river. That's just me. But you and I thought that hand through pretty much exactly the same way.
It's getting kind of scary.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
We're going to be stuck with each other for a whole week.
Man.
Next week's show is going to be so lame. All right, but Ed, obviously you lost a good chunk of change on that hand, but we'll make you feel a little better by sending you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com, and they will probably show you how strong Ace of Hearts, King of Hearts is. Just a guess.
I think that's a green hand.
That's a green hand. But if anybody else has a hand of the week, and we have a lot of them stored up, so that's good. Keep them coming. Send them to podcast@andyupmagazine.com.
Another good show. I want to thank the Poker Curious guy for coming on.
Absolutely.
Bill Siebert. And Scott, I'm looking forward to the trip, and hopefully we'll see a bunch of people out in Vegas that are from the Antiup Nation. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of AntiupMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiupMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiupMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
So he limped to a crazy Asian guy who's played 95% of the hands, calling, all right, I'm going to start over here. Let's find out what the hell this guy's going with.
Are we starting the entire hand over?
I don't know. Shoot.
I might just leave this all in. It's really good.